Hello and welcome to Quarter Time Podcast in partnership with Lovell Netball. I'm Lucy G.
And I'm Lucy P. And we're here to bring you all the netball goodness you never knew you needed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Quarter Time Pod. We are starting our Netball World Cup coverage. So excited. Luce, how are you doing? Can you contain yourself?
Frankly, no is the answer to that, because as we all know, listeners of the pod will know, I'm a very excitable person.
And no.
So I know this comes as surprising news for everyone. But yeah, I've got my dance moves ready. I'm very, very excited. It's the pinnacle of the netball calendar. And I mean, it just doesn't get better than going to a World Cup in a different country. It would be great to go to Cape Town. I've been once before, but it was very brief visit, so it'll be really nice to see a bit of the city as well. And yeah, just get stuck in netball.
Yeah, super excited. God forbid you have a coffee or an energy drink. The coffee away from
I'm absolutely banned from coffee for the duration of the trip.
Can't wait to live with you. It's gonna be great. So Luce, right, give us the lowdown. Okay, firstly, what's coming up on today's show, and then give us all the info that our listeners need for the Netball World Cup coverage and what they can expect from us.
Okay, so today's episode is The Road to Cape Town with World Netball CEO Claire Breagle. And we're going to discuss everything from the initial bid, what exactly goes into organising the Netball World Cup, some of the challenges they've faced along the way, and just basically what we can expect from the next 2 weeks of competition and the legacy going forward. I have to say, this is a must listen with loads of information about what goes on behind the scenes, as well as a detailed look at the partnership with South Africa, commercialization, so much other stuff. It's really juicy. And yesterday we launched our full content calendar for the Netball World Cup. So do check that out across our social media channels. We have 5 recorded episodes and 3 live podcasts across the 2 weeks with some super special guests, plus post-match interviews, behind the scenes content of what we get up to in Cape Town, Instagram reels, dancing, everything, the whole kitchen sink. So make sure that you're following us on social media for all of that action. And Tuesday's episode will be a preview breaking down all the teams, including the ones to watch, the predictions, and so much more.
Amazing. I'm so excited for that one. That's going to be a monster episode, isn't it?
Yeah. And
throughout the World Cup, you'll also be able to keep up to date via our socials with all the results and fixtures, any key talking points from the day. We're going to have a game of the day as well that we're going to feature. So loads of content coming your way. As always, we love to hear from our lovely listeners, and we really do want to start loads of conversations throughout the World Cup, really build up that buzz. So do get in touch with us either in the comments on socials, or you can slide into our DMs. We are always here for a chat. And as always, if you enjoy listening to the pod, we would genuinely love for you to share it with your netball pals and just get as many people on the journey with us as possible. So drop it in the WhatsApp group chat, tag your friends in post, share it, you know, carry a pigeon mail, whatever. Like, just get the word out.
Yeah, exactly, Luce. We love to see that. And remind everyone just quickly how they can watch the World Cup.
Yes. So viewers in the UK can watch all the matches on Sky and on the BBC from day 4 onwards. One match per day will also be on Sky's YouTube channel, which is fab. And everything is going to go on Netball Pass, so you can catch up at your leisure. We'll put a link in the show notes to World Netball's website with all the details of how to watch everywhere else in the world too, because it is going super global.
Yeah, exactly. Mrs. and Mrs. Worldwide, we are basically calling ourselves now. Global Netball, brand netball, of course. Amazing. So coming up after the break, we interview World Netball CEO Claire Breagle about the road to Cape Town. So, Luce, the Netball World Cup is here. And as you know, I simply could not be more excited.
Oh, mate, tell me about it. It's the biggest event of the netball calendar. And what better way to show your support for the Roses than by heading to lovellnetball.co.uk and picking yourself up some of the Roses fanwear?
Oh, of course. And I actually have this, okay, this is a bit embarrassing, but I have this weird superstition that when I watch England play, I have to be wearing some kind of kit, like a top or a hoodie or something. Otherwise, I convince myself that if they don't win, it was all my fault.
Oh my God, that is literally insane. But at least you and our listeners can get 15% off at levelnetboards.co.uk with the code NETPOD15 until the end of August.
Amazing. Happy shopping, guys.
Well, we are thrilled to kick off our Netball World Cup campaign with the CEO of World Netball. It's Claire Briegel. How are you doing, Claire?
Hello, Lucy. I'm doing very well. I'm really delighted to be here. Very excited about what's coming around the corner.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for coming back on the pod. Delighted to have you back for a second time. And of course, this time round, we are talking all about the World Cup, which is mere days away now. Very, very excited. So we're going to start off by going all the way back to the very beginning, back to the initial bidding process, and just dig into sort of how that all works and what the process is. So it was back in 2018 when South Africa first decided to put in a bid for the World Cup. And we'd love to just find out a bit more about what that entails. So what did Netball South Africa have to do to secure the rights to host the competition in 2023?
So yes, it's quite a long and involved process, as you might imagine, to select a host for a World Cup. This is one of the most critical parts in probably the most critical thing in our 4-year calendar. And one of the most important jobs that I have is to run the bid evaluation process. So we ask for expressions of interest from all of our full member nations. They're entitled to put in an expression of interest. So not every country that puts in an expression of interest will actually go through to the next stage, just because they might realize that as they're going through that process, the timing might not be right for them, or that they would rather be bidding for a World Youth, perhaps before they bid for a World Cup. So yes, when it came around to South Africa bidding, they had already been talking to us about whether they would be perhaps bidding a smaller event first, like Fast Five. But we had a very successful World Youth in Africa in 2017. So I think that gave them the confidence to move forward and to bid for the full World Cup. One of the key things, of course, with every World Cup is to make sure that the bidders have the full commitment of their sporting infrastructure and their governments. And it had been a number of years since South Africa had hosted a World Cup in a major team sport. So they were very keen to put in a bid. So through that bid evaluation process, we look for the host country commitment up front. We then look at all the technical competence and the facilities that are available in the host country. And then we look at the longer term impacts, the legacy programs that will come out of it, and what the impact of that event will be on the long term development of the sport. So there are actually 13 areas that we evaluate, but that's the sort of summary of the, you know, where are you in terms of commitment? What backing have you got? And that includes things like, are your current sponsors likely to want to get involved? Are your what funding is there available from the government? It's an expensive thing to put on a World Cup, but it can be hugely rewarding in terms of its long-term impact. So you need those commitments up front to make sure that you can actually deliver the long-term benefits. So yes, so process started a long time ago. Feels like centuries ago, because we're obviously very focused in the present right now delivering. But it was we ended up with two countries that were in the final bidding process, and we had two absolutely excellent bids, and the other country was New Zealand. And we evaluated each of the bids on those 13 categories with this independent bid evaluation committee that was set up to look at it. The conclusion of that was that on the basis of the legacy and the impact, the long-term impact, that the South Africa bid would have the longer-term impact in terms of the growth of the sport. So that was what pipped it into a win for South Africa. I have to say, financially, they were very similar, actually. The funding that was going behind each of them was very similar, which helped us in terms of that decision, because we absolutely rely on the World Cup to fund World Netball and many of our development programs in each 4-year cycle. So the financials are really critical, but actually having an event that will have such a huge long-term impact in terms of legacy, that's really important.
That sort of long-term impact is, I mean, we see already so much conversations happened about how significant this is going to be for Africa. It's the 60th anniversary of the Netball World Championships, and also, as you mentioned, the first time it's being held on African soil. So can you talk to us about how World Netball and Netball South Africa are going to capitalize on this literally a history-making event? What are some of the key markers of success for this World Cup?
So both Netball South Africa and ourselves have ambitions around Africa, quite clearly, and also the Africa Netball, our regional federation. So you'll be aware of the strength of the African teams. If we look back at Liverpool, where we ended up with four African teams in the top eight of the competition. So you can see how it's not just all about South Africa and Malawi. You've got Uganda coming through. You've got Zimbabwe. You've got Zambia coming through. So there are a number of strong teams. And the growth in Africa has been through a long-term investment program with World Netball. We have a regional development manager there. We've been working with each of the countries. So the impact we're looking at is one in South Africa. And so the ambitions for Netball South Africa are to create a professional league. That's their longer. So what they are doing through the World Cup is promoting netball, promoting the whole importance of the sport, building interest, not only through participation, but also through commercial partners, and trying to build towards a professional league. So that's their ambition. One of their key things is talking about taking netball back to the people. So they've been really strong on going out to all the provinces, not just working with Western Cape, and making sure that all the provinces are touched by the World Cup and the ability to grow netball in each of the provinces. So that's been important to them. So one of the key things that they've been doing is investing in netball facilities. So Western Cape, there's been a huge investment program in terms of upgrading netball facilities, but also they are providing wooden courts, to sprung wooden floors, to each of the nine provinces. So they're making sure that each province will benefit from that. So that's a big step forward for them. And all of the Netball South Africa development side, the coaching and umpiring, they're doing programs around the country. So that's great. And then internationally, they've done a couple of activations in Africa already, sort of coaching and umpiring. Didn't mention as well, of course, the Netball World Cup itself increases the technical skills of, if you think about the data capture bench, the bench officials and all of that. Mm. So there's the immediate technical benefits to the individuals involved in Netball South Africa. Whatever role they play, they're learning new skills. And then beyond Africa, we're looking at some intervention with the USA, actually, which is really nice. So it's really nice if South Africa is actually going to the USA, which for netball is a developing country, unusually legacy going the other way. So huge ways of doing that. But just we're working towards an African Development Day whilst the event goes on, where we're bringing in ministers of sport from other countries to come in and learn about the legacy programs and what impact netball can have on the women and girls, predominantly women and girls, but not only, and what they can learn from the World Cup, from previous World Cups as well. We had a really good intervention with the Netball World Cup 2019 in Zambia, around hub sites and community netball. So we'll be showcasing that as well. So it's that opportunity for legacy across the continent and beyond is really important to us.
And it's fantastic to hear actually about all that work that's going on kind of behind the scenes, and also in all the areas of netball. So not just focusing on the kind of elite professional side from a playing perspective, but also you've got to have all of that groundwork, all of those umpires, coaches, technical officials kind of in place and upskilling for the game to progress, basically. But I think it's obviously such a significant and important event in the netball calendar, as you said, probably the pinnacle event that we have. And I think we can only imagine the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to organise something of this magnitude. So can you tell us about the practicalities of how the host nation works alongside World Netball to organise the Netball World Cup?
So that's really interesting, because you'll understand that World Netball itself is evolving and growing and strengthening as an organisation. So in previous World Cups, perhaps in Australia or in England, World Netball has basically supports, but the expertise is very much within the country. So with Africa, because this is the first time they've hosted a World Cup, and perhaps they're sort of missing some expertise, we've put in a little bit more support. And that's been as at the same time that World Netball has grown. So I have an event consultant, a lady called Kate Agnew, who's worked for years for Netball New Zealand. And she's been deployed out in South Africa for the last 3 months. And she's also been supporting remotely from there. So it was one of the first things that we said when the hosting was awarded to South Africa, that we would be giving them support through the process on a part-time basis. And the previous event director was doing that to begin with South Africa. So that's on the event side, but even on the marketing and digital side, where again, our department is quite strong now. We've been building that department ourselves. So to assist in the branding, obviously we provide all the branding and that side. In terms of the Congress that goes along, we actually run the Congress. So what we're looking for is the hosting of it, if you like. So the World Netball Congress, where full member countries can send 2 delegates and an observer, and the associate members can send an observer to that. So that's a big coming together of all the netball family once every 2 years. And that's going to be really special this time, because we haven't seen everybody since 2019. Everything's been done online since then because of COVID. We missed our Congress. Well, we didn't miss our Congress in 21, but we held it online. So, yes. And then just generally supporting on decision making. We obviously enable through our regional federations for all the qualifiers to happen. And that was a huge program of work last year. So a lot for us to do, but because of the importance of the World Cup to us and to the sport, it's right that should be the case.
Yeah, I completely agree. And those qualifiers obviously were fantastic events. And Lucy and I were very lucky to go to the Europe qualifiers up in Glasgow, which was fantastic. And can you tell me a bit about what you thought of those, kind of any standout performances or anything that you learned from those qualifiers around the world?
So I'm not going to do the pundit bit. That's not my role. That's a bit like a mother choosing her favourite child or the one that's going to be best at university. So that's not my role. But I was lucky to go. I went to the first one, which was held in Fiji. And that was particularly poignant because that was the country that should have hosted the World Youth in 2021. So I've made a commitment to go to that one. And of course, that was where we saw Tonga really shining on the world stage. So they've done some very amazing development work over the last 10 years. They've been building towards this, but that qualifier was marvelous. So we're very excited about seeing what happens from the Americas. And now, of course, Jamaica didn't have to play in the qualifiers, but did, as the qualifier was hosted in Jamaica. They've just come off the back of winning the Central American Caribbean regional games, which was our first time in those games. So that's exciting for them. Yeah, so America's always loved to see them play. They've been, some of their teams have been off the scene a bit because of COVID. So we hope they'll be able to perform well in Asia. Yeah. I know that Singapore have come to the game so many times. Sri Lanka are clearly playing very strong. I love the fact that after the qualifiers for Sri Lanka, they were welcomed home with a bus tour alongside the women cricketers who just won a regional competition. So I think that's the first time that the team in Sri Lanka have been recognised so much by their nation. And we're looking at actually broadcasting some of the games on free-to-air in Sri Lanka. So that's quite exciting for us. Yeah, Europe, I didn't go to the qualifiers, but always a strong battle of the qualifiers. Very sorry that we don't have more births, because obviously Northern Ireland didn't qualify. Now, who have I forgotten of all my favourite children? Yeah, the African qualifiers, oh, that was a real humdinger. So in Africa, what we do as a secretariat is we send someone to work closely with each of the qualifiers. Obviously, we appoint all the umpires for those. Make sure that we provide them with branding. We were able this time, really good step forward, obviously, in terms of broadcasting those. Very important to us. So we made sure each of the countries had a good host broadcaster so in place. And clearly the host broadcaster for the World Cup, Supersport, they broadcast the qualifier as well, which is great to have that world-class broadcasting. And then we've been able to put all of the matches from the qualifiers onto Netball Pass, which is, so if anybody missed any and would like to see those, they can still see those games on Netball Pass, which is great. So if they want to catch up on the form, I'd recommend they do that. So So qualifiers really, really good. We were absolutely delighted. I think we worked out that 42 member nations were involved in the road to the World Cup, which is our biggest ever number of countries that have actually been in the program, and just hundreds of athletes and officials and things. So it really is, those to me, seeing those regional qualifiers gain in status and importance has been one of the delights of this program. Yeah,
100%. And like Lou said earlier, it was such a privilege to be involved in the Europe qualifiers. You can just see like the growth of netball globally is really on an upward trajectory. And it's so incredible to witness that in person. And I think as well, if we sort of return back to South Africa, the 2023 Quad Series in January was a really positive event. It provided the four competing teams with a chance to prepare for what it will be like at the World Cup, really, and also kind of trial run or a dummy run for the big event, if you will. However, it wasn't without its issues. There were a couple of technical issues with the stream. And we also know that South Africa is subject to load shedding, where power outages can take place throughout the day and night, which could cause some issues. So what have been the main challenges that you have faced so far in the preparation for the World Cup?
So the venue itself is a conference centre, and it's a shell with no seats in it. So that test event for us was critical, because you actually had a build from an empty hall, like a, you know, an exhibition hall. There was huge learning from that. The transmission issue was not due to load shedding. So actually, load shedding in Cape Town, because we're actually in a complex with a major hospital, it's not seemed to be an issue, and that wasn't as a result of load shedding. So a different technical issue. We are confident with the World Cup that they will have learned from that. I think what we're learning now is around, well, we've got excellent security. I have to say we've been really, really pleased with the government officials that have been moved over to help us on all the safety and security of the individuals around town. The low build, what they're actually building right now in venue. And we've got one of the things we're operating in two halls. So it's really important that we get the communications between the two halls right, where you're effectively doubling up your staff in order to handle that. Yeah, I think it is that step up from hosting an international to hosting a World Cup, and it's everything that goes around it and the requirement. I mean, there are no gaps, you know, in terms of broadcast. We are broadcasting globally. We have to make sure that all of the matches start on time, end on time, and progress as per the run sheet. And that's where the experience of someone like Kate Agnew working with the organizing committee, telling them the things that she's learned over 20 years working with Sky New Zealand. They've got the best support in the world there. And I have to say, you know, Supersport are an amazing broadcaster. They've committed fully to the event. They've put on predominantly female team, which is amazing to actually promote women in broadcast. The skill base on the ground, you've got a lot of very skilled netball operators, and they're just operating in a new environment. So it's about giving them those opportunities to practice those skills in a different environment with a different sort of management regime. We're learning from them. So I'm really looking forward to some of the entertainment that will happen around the event, the opening ceremonies, the fan parks. We'll learn so much from them. So it isn't one-way learning at all. It's working together and using the skill base we have. We have an event and commercial operations handbook manual that develops each time we run a World Cup. So it's about sharing expertise, about being patient with each other and at this stage about smiling quite a lot. And it's going to be really exciting. I think we're all just want to get on the ground now because it's being there to support the team and make sure it happens. So
yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And the word marriage is coming to mind, like that collaboration, working together. I feel like the initial bid was the wedding and then the hard work kind of starts after that.
Yeah, I've had children. Giving birth is quite hard, so I don't think that too far.
Exactly. And I mean, there must be so much that goes into it. Obviously, World Netball has to be kind of overseeing all of that stuff that's happening on the ground and things like that. And at the time of the tickets being released, there were a few concerns expressed with the ticket pricing, as some of the locals felt that the tickets were too expensive. So how was that that pricing strategy devised?
So went through a few loops with that. I think you will always get comments about ticketing prices, but the idea is about having a range of ticketing prices, and that's what's in place. So we absolutely worked with the organising committee on that and benchmarked against other similar events. So we're not any different. It's just it's the first time we've had a Netball World Cup in Africa. So some people that are used to buying Netball local prices might have found it a change. But actually the most expensive tickets sell first. So it's really I think that's just if people haven't seen netball at those prices before, but nothing different to what we might have done in the past. It's expensive to put on a World Cup, to be honest. And as I said, because it's a complete stand build, you know, there are no seats in these places. You've got a lot that's got to be covered. But also it's very good. It is very good value for money. If you look against any other event that's going on, you know, whether it's rock concerts or other activities, going out for a meal or whatever. And we know people are going to have the time of their lives. It's going to be a huge experience. And then in addition to that, we've got the commitment from each of the provinces to have fan parks. So for people that haven't been able to get a ticket, they can actually watch the event in a fan park and have that really good experience close to the match. There'll be fan parks in Cape Town, and then there'll also be fan parks around each of the provinces. So we're hoping everybody will be able to watch and see the matches and touch, you know, be a part of the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just about bringing everyone together, isn't it, for this event? And as well as the kind of logistics and everything else that goes on kind of organising the event, there's obviously a key factor in putting on a World Cup, which is working towards that professionalisation, like you mentioned, with South Africa looking to set up their professional league. And a key part of obviously growing and developing the sport as a whole is that professionalisation, which goes hand in hand with sponsorships, forming long-lasting partnerships with different organisations. And we know that Vitality were a major sponsor for the 2019 World Cup, but will not be sponsoring the event this time around. And there was some confusion recently, as they had already been announced as sponsors and then they had to be edited out of some team uniform photos. Are you able to provide any clarity on the change of circumstances around Vitality's sponsorship for the Netball World Cup?
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk about this. So Vitality have been and remain a really strong supporter of netball, and they were keen to be a title partner. We were keen to have them, organising committee keen to have their contribution. But as we work through all of the sponsorship structure, we realised that actually there were better ways to put the sponsorship together. And so they, with us, agreed that their best activations were sponsoring teams. So you have Vitality have are sponsoring the England Roses. You have Discovery sponsoring the Proteas. And then we are bringing a whole other group of sponsors in to sponsor the World Cup. And we've elevated Telkom and Spar, who are terrific partners of Netball South Africa, to give them more exposure. So it was really a reorganization of sponsorship. There's a few more sponsors to be announced, which is quite exciting. So I just have to say, this is actually the most successful commercially of all our World Cups, which is really exciting and a really good play for Africa and for South Africa. So whilst it wasn't the most elegant of things that happened, it's actually good news for the tournament, and it has enabled us to bring in some other partners. So we remain committed with Vitality generally as a sport. They've been super, and So look for their support going forward as well.
100%. And like, how wonderful to hear that it's the most commercially successful World Cup. Like, that is absolutely brilliant. And one of the other things that we want to talk about, which you touched on earlier, actually, is around the World Netball Congress, which I don't think a lot of people know about. It's not necessarily something that's spoken about a lot or that's really in the public sphere. And obviously the World Netball Congress is the meeting of the membership of World Netball, where member nations come together to review progress and determine priorities for the next period, as well as undergoing elections for board directors. So we took a little bit of a deep dive and we read the 2022 Congress minutes and found some really interesting stuff about some of these board appointments, including that of Rob Mills, who has previously worked with FIFA, the International Cricket Council and rugby, and sort of going back to what Lucy was just asking about, would also be focusing on the commercialization of the sport. So can you share any details with us about how involved the World Netball Board are in the World Cup or in planning major events, and what impact that they have?
So yes, the board, they're all non-executives. So these aren't their full-time jobs. They're doing this on top of whatever they do in the rest of their lives. So, but we've evolved the board to bring in first Rob. He's our first independent director. So bringing in people who have not been elected into their roles, that have been asked to join the board because they bring a specific skill set, and also because they have that independence of thought. So it's been an evolution. And in fact, we're bringing on our second independent director at this Congress, subject to the members voting, that they have the final say, obviously, that we've chosen the right people through the nominations committee's work. So Rob has been great contributor to our board. And if you think about the function of the board, which is responsible for the strategy, the oversight, developing the strategic plan with me and my team, and then we're the delivery side, listening to members, really making sure that we are evolving the organization and the sport in the direction that the members want. So they're very much operating at a strategic level, and then allocating resources appropriately so that we can actually deliver what is in the strategic plan. So we absolutely brought Rob in for his commercial skills, and he is currently, we have a commercial committee, which is chaired by our vice president, Shirley Hooper, and he's on that commercial committee. So that's where we do the work, and that's where we work with my event team, a digital marketing team, and with our appointed commercial agencies. So we've been working with CSM on the sponsorship side. We've been working with Sport5 on the international broadcast sales side, but also with other agencies looking at our commercial future. So his impact on the World Cup has been around some of the discussions around sponsorship and broadcast sales, but actually our board's focus is towards the future and about how we evolve the event portfolio. So there will be some further discussions about event portfolio development, what does our roadmap look like for the next 10, 15 years, that side of things. And taking a long, hard look at what value we have in our sport and how we add value to it. And so that's how we use some of our boards. So that whilst so we get very good value out of them because they're not paid, and they share their expertise wisely and help guide us. And then my team, we're out there to make sure that we can work with our other volunteer committees, because obviously we have our technical panels as well, that our coaching advisory panel, rules advisory panel, the officiating advisory panel, the medical advisory panel, and we will at some point quite soon have an athletes commission advisory panel as well. So that's probably the other role I should talk about a little bit about that will be elected at this Congress, which is our first athlete director. So we have a candidate that's been selected again through the nominations committee. That's Stacey Francis Bayman, who will be put forward to the members to vote her onto the board. And in her job description, if you like, she will also be establishing that athletes panel. So big changes in terms of our governance, which on the face of it, what does that mean? But they actually have a huge impact in terms of how we, as I say, how we apply our resources and how we work with our members to deliver what they're looking for in terms of the growth and development of the sport.
Mm. Oh, that would be absolutely fantastic. And I mean, Stacey is, you know, a fantastic role model for the game, you know, really inspirational as a person and a player. And strikes me as the sort of person that gets stuff done as well.
Absolutely.
So I think, I think she'll, so fingers crossed for Stacey. And obviously I hope everything goes smoothly at the conference.
Thank you.
And everything goes well from that perspective. Before we conclude and ask you our final question on the World Cup, we couldn't not mention the recent news that the state of Victoria has actually withdrawn from hosting the Commonwealth Games in 2026. World Netball's press release stated that World Netball is committed to working with the Commonwealth Games Federation as it develops options and solutions for the Games in 2026. Is there a danger that we may not have a Commonwealth Games at all in 2026? And what impact could that have on netball specifically, given that we also don't have the benefit of the Olympics as another major multi-sport competition?
Well, clearly this news has just come out in the last 2 days. And if you read the response or the notifications from Commonwealth Games, they were as surprised as we were. And I feel very sorry for them, because this is a major, major blow at this stage. And I feel sorry for the organising committee, who we've been already meeting with. We've been out to Bendigo last year when we were out in Australia just before the Fast Five series. So it was a shock, an absolute shock and a surprise, because everything seemed to be progressing to plan. So we have to acknowledge that this is a blow in terms of the profile that netball gets from Commonwealth Games. But out of every adversity, as they say, comes opportunity. What we see is, I mean, for us, the state of Victoria is a huge supporter of netball. You'll be aware that Visit Victoria are a sponsor of Netball Australia. So I don't see that as the state themselves moving away from their support of netball. Far from it. I think it possibly opens up other opportunities with the state. And that's obviously discussions with Netball Australia and that side of things. For the Commonwealth Games, for us, the importance of the Commonwealth Games is the exposure that it gives us around the world. And we've had three back-to-back terrific competitions, Glasgow, Gold Coast, and then Birmingham. For me, I've been, you know, involved in all of those, and those have been just amazing opportunities for netball to demonstrate its strength on the world stage. So we've benefited hugely from being in the Commonwealth Games over the last years in terms of exposure and growth of the sport. It is a gap in our calendar, but we'll see where it ends up. I know there are other host cities that have wanted to host in the past, but for any country to come in, or any host city to come in with only 3 years, that's a huge challenge. And I think we have to wait and see what the next steps from the CGF are. My heart goes out to everybody that's been involved in terms of that blow. But as I say, netball as a sport, we will regroup as a result of that. We obviously, as I said, we were talking about our product portfolio and our roadmap for the next 10 years. We need to see where that puts us. If there were, we need to plan if there is no Commonwealth Games, and also if it still goes ahead. So we will take it, you know, we're a business as well at the end of the day, and you react to what goes on around you. I'm a positive person, as you can tell. So we will find the positives out of this, but we will work. We'll work with the Commonwealth Games, our friends there at Commonwealth Games Federation. They're a good team. They're a strong team, and they put on an excellent event. And I suspect some people will be going, oh, this is an opportunity for us to step in and save the day. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, shock is definitely the right word. I think all of our jaws collectively hit the floor when we found out about it. And I think the risk that there might not actually be a Commonwealth game seems, by the sounds of it, is a very real possibility. But like you say, watch the space. We adapt, we overcome, we innovate, and we'll see what we can do.
I know. And I'm thinking here, because we're also we've got the Commonwealth Youth Games that's happening. Just it's the netball competition starts just as our World Cup finishes in Tobago, and so we really want all that to go ahead well, and I hope it doesn't put a dampener on that. I mean, that's the youth competition, the under 18, so that's where it's that's the future of our sport there. So so we need to make sure that that doesn't affect how that event comes across. It shouldn't do it. That will be a marvelous event as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to all the athletes selected to that, and to my good friend Shona Forbes, who's going to be leading England in that competition. So
amazing. I'm not going. I wish I was. We've got some of my team are doing that on top of. But obviously I was really involved in getting netball into that competition. So I'm thrilled that we'll be able to showcase Fast Five there.
Absolutely. Lots to look forward to still. Yes. But final question before we let you go. As we mentioned, there's no doubt that this is going to be a historic event, and we are genuinely buzzing with excitement at this getting underway in just a few days' time. And it's a culmination of years and years of planning and hard work by so many people. And it really will be a World Cup to remember. I've got absolutely no doubt. And this is your third World Cup, I believe, as CEO of World Netball. So what do you personally hope that the legacy will be after this World Cup?
Well, I guess this is the last continent that hasn't hosted a World Cup. So I talked a lot about the impact on Africa. I've just adored working with Africa over the years. I learned so much from the people I work with. They are so passionate about the sport, and someday an African team will win the World Cup. I don't know if it's this time around, but the athletes are amazing, and they just need the support structures around them. They are so passionate about the impact of the sport. It has such an impact on their lives when they're involved in the game, and it's transformative. So taking the World Cup to Africa, I feel, is enough in its own, but I know it will go on from strength to strength. We've got Sydney to look forward to in another 4 years, the Sydney Organising Committee have committed hugely to the development of the sport. There's even more development funding coming in with that. So we're already starting to plan how we can use that. So it just builds and it builds, and it's just lovely to have been involved over these years. I feel really privileged. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Netball is 1000% on the up, and we are here for it. We love to see it. Oh, Claire, thank you so, so much for joining us today for our Road to World Cup episode. And hopefully see you out there. See you in Cape Town in a few days.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. It's been nice to have a bit of reflective time, but I must rush now because I've got a couple of things to do.
Thank you so much for your time, Claire.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Quarter Time Podcast. As you know, we are bringing you daily coverage from the Netball World Cup with new episodes, live podcasts, and social media content. So keep your eye on our social channels for all the information you need, including our content schedule.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at QuarterTimePod for the latest netball updates. Do get involved in the conversation online by letting us know what you think of the matches throughout the World Cup, which players you've got your eye on, who's impressed you, etc. We really do love hearing from you, so do get in touch.
Finally, we would really appreciate if you can take a moment to rate and review, as it helps other people to find the podcast. If you enjoy listening to the pod, if you enjoy listening to the pod or the pod, please let us know and do spread the word with your netball pals so even more people can get involved. Don't forget as well to take advantage of our exclusive 15% discount with Lovell Netball by entering the code NETPOD15 at the checkout at lovellnetball.co.uk. Take care, everyone, and see you soon. Bye.
Bye.